All right. Welcome, everyone. Appreciate you guys sticking around for the question and answer. Hope this is a very helpful time for all. And I want to, again, take this chance to express our appreciation to you, John. Maybe already picked up on it, but if not, John's from the Dallas area, so he trekked a decent distance to get down here and be with us. We're really thankful for him and the way he's ministered to us this morning, and we'll continue to do so through the Q&A. As we start, I've got a couple of questions that folks who couldn't be here have given to me and questions of my own to get things rolling, and then I'll open it up to the audience. And if you're interested in asking a question, raise your hand, and we'll get to you, as many as we can. And I'll also summarize your question briefly for the sake of the recording after you say it. So, and with all that said, why don't I start us with a word of prayer? Invite God here again. Lord, we do thank you for your, again, just incredible grace and kindness towards us. And we thank you for our brother John being here. Thank you for his family, freeing him to come. We pray that you give him safe travels back to Irving, and that you would just continue to use what he has already shared and give him wisdom as he shares in this Q&A, Lord. We want to be useful servants, the kind that hear, well done, good and faithful servant at the end, Lord. And we know stewarding technology is a part of that in media, and so we ask that you would speak through John, and that you would help us to have open hearts and minds, and that you would just give all of us clarity as to how we can better steward these things to your glory, Lord. Amen. All right, so I know you talked a little bit about this in the message, but I wanted to see what kind of limits you put around media and technology yourself, and then for your home, if there are any limits you guys have as a family around media and technology.
Yeah, so I should say first off, my kids are in first and third grade now. And I have the advantage of having them at a school that isn't, you know, technology free, but they don't encourage heavy use. So they don't. It's not one of those schools where every kid gets an iPad. So that gives us an advantage that they're learning how to, you know, read and do math and all that stuff without that. And that's helpful to us. And as a, you know, web developer and programmer and someone who very much values knowing how to use technology, I don't know that really young kids my kids' age need to spend a lot of time on devices to know how to use devices later. So I don't think that if they don't spend a lot of time, I'm not worried that they won't be able to compete in the information world or anything like that. I think that they can learn that more into middle school and high school and be okay. So that's why we hold back. So, however, like I said earlier, you know, when it comes to them, you know, I teach them how to maybe use Microsoft Word to write a paper or something like that. And so my son loves writing screenplays. My daughter's not quite there with reading, so she likes to do a little bit more painting. My son and I have recently learned how to use some 3D software, and so he's learning that, and he loves those things. So I try to encourage and inculcate in them creativity in that. But like I said, when it comes to the consumption part, you know, during the week while they're in school, we usually avoid TV for the most part, just because there's kind of come home and snack and homework and dinner and, you know, all that stuff. There's just not a lot of room for it. But then on the weekends, we'll let them watch a movie and let them have a little bit of time with the computer, that kind of thing. So we try to, you know, be in that world, but try not to be of the world as much as we can. That's kind of where we are. My wife and I still, as being professors and workers, you know, it's hard not to, when the kids go to bed, not to pull the laptops out and have marriage be us, you know, doing this next to each other, you know. So we really try to think about that and say, hey, let's have some intentional time together in the evening and not just be addicted to our screens, too. But that can be hard with our professions. You know, the reality is that if I don't want to be using my device with in front of my kids, I still got to do my taxes, right? And I have to do them online. So they'll see me using the device sometimes.
Sure. Thank you. And we got a question from a parent who's got teenagers and is wondering specifically about the violent first-person shooter sort of video games, like a Call of Duty type thing. And the parent's concern is the teen is really has got a compulsion to play the game a whole lot, and then wondering how the game, with its very realistic violence, is shaping their developing child. And so the question is, how can a parent effectively communicate these concerns to their teen about how they're being shaped by a game when the teen tends to disregard game reviews or other places that raise those sort of issues?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always harder. You know, I used to be a camp counselor, and they'd always tell you, remember, you got to be really strict at the beginning, and then you can loosen up. It's a lot harder if you start being loose and cool and then try to kind of squeeze back down. So if you're already at that spot, it can, you know, it can be hard to pull back. And like I said, I'm at a much easier place now where my kids believe I'm strong and all this kind of stuff, so that's easier. And I know that I'm not there yet, so I know that those are hard things. I don't know if for a lot of things with technology, I think that they're best learned by experimenting and doing. So I think that experimenting with not doing it for a little while and kind of having a conversation about how that makes you feel. At the same time, I also think that parents, our job is not necessarily to be our kids' friends. We're not pals. We're parents. And so that may involve doing things that our kids don't like for a while. And what you want is your kid when they're 25 to say, I hated you when I was 15, and now I'm thankful. You don't want them to say, I hate you now because you didn't care enough about me to say no. You know, and that's really, really hard to do, but sometimes we have to do it. So I would think that some of those things that, again, they take the image of God and they destroy it. And I don't think that those are helpful for us. I know that when you and I were kids, right, a lot of the video games just weren't as explicit, so I don't know that you really thought about them as much. I don't know that that was super healthy either, but it didn't feel as bad. So I think that, you know, at least having a dialogue with him or her, but that dialogue starting from not doing that for a while. And if you feel like you need to be a parent, then you need to be a parent.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Then that was some great thoughts on, you know, cultivating those sort of relationships, but yeah, taking beyond just the video games to more broadly.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts around cultivating a relationship with your kids where talk about meeting technology as normal and as non-threatening as it can feel as you're engaging?
Well, one of the things I really would recommend and like, we talked about this morning, was there's a new little book by Andy Crouch called TechWise Parenting. And so it's about parenting and technology, but I really feel like it's not so much about what software to install and what things to get. It's a little bit more about how to build your home in a way that that cultivates wisdom and creativity and courage in your kids. And so he talks about, say, maybe 100 years ago when you'd have to have a heater in the middle of your home and that hearth becoming like a focal point that everybody gathered around. And once that goes away, then he's saying, what in your home becomes your focal point? And what does your living area say about what you value? You know, do you have a piano that's hard to play that requires creativity and courage and it requires a lot of practice? Or do you have, you know, mostly all screens and things that are easy, that are consumptive? So I think that's a great little book that is helpful. The book that I wrote is probably a little bit more theological, thoughtful, and not as useful. So don't buy it. Go buy Andy Crouch's book. It's much more useful, unless you're just interested in theological things. So I think thinking constantly about, you know, all the things around us that are constantly shaping us in our home and what are we making easy. So this is just a personal example. If I want to go running in the morning, what I tend to do is put out my gym clothes and put them out next to my bed so that when the alarm goes off, I don't have that thing that says, oh, it's going to be too hard to go. I'm just going to skip it this morning. So I'm trying to make hard things easier, and I'm trying to make things that are easy harder, like not having ice cream in the house. And so we're trying to do the same thing for our kids, where we try to look at lists of, like, what are some of the best kids' books? And let's go get those from the library. Rather than saying, why don't you go get the dumbest thing you can find that is trying to be sold to you and let them do that. So we're trying to cultivate a sense that there are some really excellent literature out there that's really fun, too. So I hope those are helpful.
Yes, thank you. You talked a little bit in your message to us about how technology affects us, you know, whether we're using it for good or bad means. I was wanting to, I guess, two things. One is kind of how do you try to discern for yourself how technology affects you? And then do you have anything for us that's maybe like a principle or a couple of questions to help us think through, for example, like how our smartphone is affecting us, how we're using it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that some of those things, like I mentioned, that Moment app, that just kind of help you get a sense of how much do I really use this thing? Just having something that you can be honest with yourself about. I think lately one of the things that I realize that can get to me is just the pace of the news cycle. I don't know if any of you guys have felt like since the last 6 or 7 months that it's just gotten a lot more hectic. That I think that those news programs and Twitter and all that stuff is really designed to amp you up, right? And sometimes when you're watching those 24-hour news channel, whichever one you like, they're both designed to get you hyped up in whatever direction they're going to go. So I find just the need to kind of check out on that and believe that the world isn't dependent on me knowing what happened today. You know, and I think that's one of the principles of the idea of Sabbath, is that when we feel the need to constantly be doing things, it's this saying that the world can't go on without me. And Sabbath says, no, God is sovereign and he can do things without me. So just taking that break, even when you feel like you need to. And maybe it's not Sunday for you, and maybe it's not a whole day, but whatever it is in that way where you say, I'm not the most important center of the universe. And I think having to, you know, I have to humbly ask my wife and my kids sometimes about how I'm doing, and talk to friends, because everything about technology now is made about you as an individual. What size screen you like, how you want to arrange your apps, it's all about you. And so you have to constantly break out of that into some type of, you know, communal setting where you're asking people about it.
Thank you. All right, wanted to open up the floor. Jim?
Do you have a place close to Dallas that is completely dead?
So the question is there a place in Dallas that's completely dead? Thankfully, I have T-Mobile, which is terrible, and so there's lots of dead spots. So that can make it easy. No, I'm just kidding. T-Mobile is great when you're in Europe because it's got free data. That's why we got it. But it doesn't work real well outside of major areas. So when we go, take my son camping every once in a while, I'm kind of a city boy, so I try to do camping with him. And those are nice places that are, you know, usually data free, and that's kind of nice so he can see that, what it's like to be data free. But I think most of the area, even the lakes, usually have some type of coverage. So do you know of a place in San Antonio that has?
Well, I'm old enough that by the time the technology hit, my kids were pretty much it.
Nice. All right, yes, Jackie?
I'm a step-grandma, no custody, but have the fourth grader with me now almost 95% of the time. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the question was about how to handle with kids outside influences that are bringing bad things to your kids. So.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things, because no matter, part of the reason why I mentioned filtering software is great, but it really maybe at best works on a couple of devices at your home, and eventually someone's going to go out and have something else. And so I think that's why, you know, I do think, you know, punishment can be a helpful thing, but also kind of talking to somebody about how did this happen? How did this make you feel? What do you think this does? How do you think the girl who's being filmed, how do you think she got there? You know, what do you think she was thinking about? And I think humanizing that, because one of the things is that, you know, you always hear, you know, people write love ballads to people they've had affairs with, right? Because that was a real human connection. People never write love ballads to pornography. You know, they don't ever do that. And so you're wanting to get that at them. And also, I mean, I think... you know, something that I didn't do this time is to talk about the way that, you know, images work on us, you know, the way that commercials work and all those kinds of things. And to think that a lot of times the reason why we go back to pornography so regularly is because images have this very powerful emotional part on us. And so it's the reason why, you know, when the color red comes on or when there's a baby, we buy the product that's next to it. You know, these images have this powerful emotional capacity. So sometimes when you're feeling, you know, down and kind of sad, pornography makes you feel better for a little while. Now, it makes you feel worse later, but it has this immediate emotional fulfilling that then goes away and makes you feel worse. And I think teasing that stuff out is really, really important, because you're going to see it and to think about, you know, the person on the other end, and to think about what this is doing to you, because, like you said, they're going to see it. I wish it was as simple as just kind of sitting down and talking with everybody and saying, hey guys, don't we all care about this? But, you know, we as parents, we get a lot of, like, kids like us when we give them a new app, right? And they like it when we give them screen time. So we kind of get points, you know? And so I know sometimes those kind of inter-family conflicts can be really, really difficult. But I hope that maybe you could sit down and say, hey, here's something I'm seeing. I don't want to be mean grandma, you know, but I want to do the best for what's the kids. And I hope you could have that conversation with them. I'm sorry it's such a difficult situation. Hope that's helpful.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jackie. Anybody else? Yes, Stephanie?
The phone conversation.
Yes.
We have a 12-year-old.
All right.
She, as far as all the friends and the kids that I've seen in her school, she's the only one who does not own a phone.
Okay.
And so there's a constant battle with the whole phone thing. And obviously it's each family to its own, deciding on what, when they get a phone, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's that whole thing, well, why don't my kids sit alone, you know, outside of school? And I'm like, why not? And she just went there for a while. That's our opinion. That's
sure. Not sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm just wondering, like, what is your opinion?
Yeah, so whenever you sort of decide on that, I mean, I think one of the difficult things that you mentioned is sort of the social pressure, right? Because that can, by not having any kind of device, eventually your kid gets, they're outside of the social world that's happening, you know? And, you know, when you, I'll mention a couple things. So when you ask kids, would you rather spend time face-to-face or spend time on their devices, they actually say face-to-face, right? When you say, which one do you do more, they say devices, and you say, why? And they say, well, there's two reasons. One of them is that we are overscheduled, so we have all these things we have to do to get into college. And the other one is that my parents watch 24-hour news, and they're terrified, right, that something bad is going to happen, and so they don't let them play outside. And so the only way to communicate is devices. So some of this is us thinking about our fear levels and what we're controlling. So if you were to look at crime, in the 1950s it was low. It went up in the 80s. And it went down, and then from the 90s, it's way down at the level of the 50s. So your kid is way safer than you ever were, right? They're like five times less likely to get kidnapped or murdered or anything than you were when you grew up in the 1980s. But we are terrified, aren't we, to allow our kids to go out and play. So I think one big thing is allowing our kids to play. Now, back to the question of phones. I think whenever you decide, there's some helpful things on things like Common Sense Media. Have any of you used that, Common Sense Media? Common Sense Media does a good job of just like reviewing movies and stuff, so you can kind of have a good idea of how it might be appropriate. If you have smaller kids, you know, we used to do this a lot and go like, is this appropriate for a 4-year-old or a 9-year-old? Because I can't remember movies. When I was a youth pastor, I used to show something like Back to the Future, and you're like, oh no, I should never show this movie, because it seemed okay when we were kids. So they do a good job of that. They also, though, if you search for something like family media contract, they have some really good little plans for things like where you and your daughter can have a little sit down and discussion and say, here's how we're going to use it. And then maybe 3 months later, we're going to evaluate and say, how is this working? And let's go on from there. So you can have some tools to set some parameters for that, and that you can have a kind of an ongoing every 3 months. And I'm of the opinion that kids should be able to have some level of privacy, maybe diaries and things like that. But parents should always be able to still have the ultimate control of that. I mean, I think you want to, you know, as they're getting older, give them more and more and more control so that they're ready when they're 18. And sometimes that's painful and requires a lot of grace and coming back. But I think those contracts can be really, really helpful, so you have something objective that you're looking at when you decide to do that. Does that give you in the direction a little bit?
Good. Yeah, I heard another guy, which, you know, Blake Jennings, who's a pastor we both know, and he gave an illustration where he talked about how he's cleaning the garage with his kid, and his kid had hit a growth spurt, and he's 7 now, and they've got a little Miata, and how his kid was finally tall enough to reach the pedals. So he said, and the kid kept bothering him, like, let me try to drive, let me do this, and Blake's trying to get his garage clean, so he's like, okay. He pulls out the car, and he gives the kid the keys and lets him start driving. And then he says, obviously that's not a true story, because you don't give a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old or whatever the keys to a car and just free him to start driving, because, you know, they've got to be older and more mature and put certain parameters in place. And he took that then to smartphone or social media, instead of just whatever age you decide, instead of just handing it to him, have some stuff like a contract or conversations about good use ahead of time, kind of like we do with driver's ed and driving tests. And first you're driving the car with me, then you later can drive on your own, kind of thinking in those sort of same steps to try to do some equipping before they receive the device or get on social media or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look back in all of human history, there's always some point when someone becomes an adult, maybe 13, and they have to go through some kind of trial, and then they get their bow and arrow or whatever it is that kind of representative of adulthood. And for America in the 20th century, that was a car for a while, but now it's a phone. But instead of like this huge training and thing, we just give it to them when they're 2, because it's a super good babysitter, right? And then we go on from there. So yeah, a lot of training and some work with them, and kind of a permit period before it's full can be really helpful.
Thanks, Stephanie. Anybody else? Eric?
So you had mentioned earlier Mm-hmm. And you kind of have to strike a balance between enrichment and consumptive.
Mm-hmm.
How do you strike that balance?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of thinking in my head, you know, if there's a difference between reading a Bible and or, you know, whatever, a book on the iPad compared to, you know, on paper.
Yeah, so like if you were to say that the Bible is, reading the Bible is consumption, right? It's not creativity. So that's not all, that all consumption is bad, right? So that, I think that's a great distinction you gave. And so, I mean, that's part of, I think, for us trying to find books that are good for our kids and spend some time doing those. And then, you know, if they've read a certain amount of those things, if they've eaten their vegetables, as it were, then they can have some ice cream, you know. So we try to just have that there where we're providing them with things, because they're not going to naturally pick the best things. Just like none of us naturally pick good food. We are built to like sugar and fatty foods and all that kind of stuff. So it requires some discipline, and we try to give that to them. As to the question about whether or not reading the Bible on paper or on screen, is that part of what you were asking?
Yeah.
I've done some research on that with some churches, so I'll split them into groups where I'll have them read in print and another group read on their phone and see how those come out. And so I would have them read a passage of Scripture and then take a little quiz afterward, and you want to know what the results were?
Sure.
It's pretty interesting. So a lot of the studies that are out there back in like the 80s, that when they did this, the people reading on paper would always do better because, you know, the screens are blocky and chunky. And as they've gotten better and better and more comfortable, like down to the iPad level, the scores are getting closer and closer and closer, except in a couple of instances. So one of the things that people, when they're reading in print, do better is they can remember the order of a narrative of a story. You know that thing that's on the lower left of that page? It's that spatial memory. So I wondered if that would happen with the Scripture. And what ended up happening is the scores were about the same, except for men scored lower on phones, and women scored about the same in both. So dudes in their phones, right? It seems like that men maybe are using screens more. Maybe in the church circles I was in, more of the men are at work with a screen all day, and they're scanning constantly. And so when they open up their Bible, they're still kind of scanning, and they go kind of too fast. On the flip side, though, when I had them do like a 1 or 2 week reading plan on their phone with the reminders, it turned out that the men did them more often, and they read more regularly on their phone. So they were reading the Bible more regularly and retaining none of it. And the women weren't reading it as much, and they were retaining some. So anyway, it was interesting to see that the screen, I don't think it made an absolute one way or the other, but it did seem to have an influence on them. And so some of the people had said, you know, I've been doing that for a while, and I've gone back to print, and other people say, man, I've never read the Bible more than on my device. And one of the best things was people saying that I've now read the entire Bible through with audio Bible, and I love it. So there's some really, really neat things. But I think just thinking about it and being reflective and doing the experiment is one of the most helpful things. So, good question.
All right. Any other questions? Yes, Pastor Dave.
Okay, so you were a youth pastor,
uh-huh.
And then years have passed. What if you were plopped back into youth ministry? What would you do different? What do you think would be some guiding principles?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it almost seems like, you know how we always say in the Scriptures that money is always talked about, so it's a really important thing that we should discuss. It almost seems like, you know, the phone has sort of replaced it as this thing that we all think about all the time. And so it seems like a, you know, a pretty important thing that can be a part of various kinds of messages. So I don't know that, I mean, this is great that we spend like one day on technology, but it seems like it can be a natural part of what you bring up all the time. But I do think that, you know, one of the challenges is how to let the seed of the gospel come up in whatever culture it's in, right? It always has this ability to have a beautiful expression in every language and around. And so you go, so what do we do in this world? Because in one sense, we want to have expression through our culture. In another sense, we also want to be countercultural at the same time. And so I don't think that people are coming to church to get a bigger music and song and dance show. I think that they're coming to get something they can't get anywhere else. And so that's part of why we want to think of, what is the one thing I can offer them? And a lot of that, I think, is just basic human connection. I think that that's communion, both kind of the literal communion and the time we spend to one another. But I think really focusing on that thing. I don't know the answer as to should everybody turn off their phone question. I think that there's with teenagers a lot of meeting kids where they are that's really tough. And we all know that we've all tried the the youth group trip where we said nobody can bring their phones and they all have them anyway. So I don't know that that's useful. Or even if the kids said, well, I tried not to, but my mom made me. You know, that's where we are now. So they're going to have them, and I think it's helping them navigate their world. So, that's a good question. And I'm glad I'm not a youth pastor sometimes. you can edit that part out.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, Carlos?
As a follow-up on the phone question, I noticed that, because I used to be on T-Mobile also years ago, and I just couldn't justify the expense of it.
Okay.
You know, $150 a month when, I went ahead and dropped them, just went to a pay-per-use phone, a track phone.
Yeah.
I do find that I was able to monitor my expenses extremely, cutting it down to about 3 months, let's say about $20 for actual usage. And on those style of phones, just like Freedom Pop also is another, you can only do as much as you've paid for in advance. Mm. So, and those phones only have a certain amount of software and apps that they can download.
Yeah.
So if the case is, I found that if parents are concerned about what the children can download and view, those phones give very, very little space for the gigantic applications that would have a lot of need for extra memory for them to be run on, like the iPhones have.
Yeah.
And on the other side, it gives them the opportunity to monitor just how much data is being used, because you only get a certain amount of use per month, and so you have to repay them and reload it up.
Yeah.
So it might be inconvenient, but on the other side, it might be more control.
Yeah, yeah, and I like that you're, you know, doing that for yourself as well. So you're talking about not getting just the biggest phone with the biggest plan and handing that to your kid, but choosing maybe one of these phones that's a little fewer features, so you can still get a hold of them, they can still make phone calls when they need to, but maybe they don't have access to everything. And maybe you even choose to do that for yourself, just as an act of some self-limiting. To,
just as an example, wanting to take a trip, I found I wanted to do something as simple as download MapQuest, which very easily on any PC. Well, the signal was, you don't have enough space, so I have to carefully go in there and knock out so many applications that I never use or touch, so I can make enough space just for to come in. So just to be able to take a simple trip to another city. And until I do so, it's not going to happen. Then most of the children, especially in their younger years, don't know how to do that. So they're afraid of access to be deterred. That's one simple way.
Yeah, setting limits is really important. And it's worth noting that neither Steve Jobs nor Bill Gates allowed their kids to have phones until they were like 15. So if you think you know better than the guys who invented them, good for you. But those guys didn't do that either.
Yep.
So.
Sounds like a nice little quote for you, Stephanie. Any other questions? Yes, Carl?
Actually, I have two.
Okay.
The first one is on the screen when you were putting it up, and you had the list of all the books that your wife quick, and then you had the list of text, emails, whatever, and you compared the number of words. Were you saying that the right side, if you're looking at the screen, of all the text, was just as valuable as the other side?
I don't think so.
The other side, the books, that's the input of what spurred my imagination as a kid.
Yeah.
Getting my friend's opinion on something doesn't spur my imagination. Okay. I wanted to make sure that you weren't saying that this was just as good because there's more words.
Yeah, no, I'm actually trying to, for a minute, exit from that debate just a little bit and think about how the tool itself is shaping me as I'm using it. So as a web developer, I know we have this capital F pattern. And we know that people tend to look at a page, the big part of a capital F, and they scan a little bit, and they go down like that. Nobody ever reads the real page. So that's the pattern that people engage in, is a capital F. So the kind of reading that you're inculcating yourself in when you read on screen, even if you're reading like 5,000 word Atlantic articles so you can sound cool at a cocktail party, even that, you're still scanning, right? You're not doing the same type of activity that you do in a book. And so I think making that distinction, it's not just about the content. The content is the distraction, right? The media itself, too, shapes what we see. So yes.
Okay.
but both and.
And my other comment and or question is, and I'm trying to get a different perspective on this.
Okay.
I am a staunch advocate for myself against Twitter, MySpace, Facebook, all of those things. Because when the platforms came out, and as I saw other people progress through, they became, first of all, an aggressive, passive form of communication, and then an aggressive, anonymous form of communication. Now, I understand that the neutrality of the platform is there, things can be done on it that are good. Right? The reason I want to change my perspective is because, well, things like even through the church that come out on Facebook, I don't see them because I refuse to go on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's got to be a safe and responsible way to use these, not only to protect myself, but also to keep stuff that I don't want in.
So you're saying that you feel like Facebook and Twitter and MySpace and all those things
are... I think they're great platforms, but you handed them to a bunch of humans.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. I think this is why, when talking about the negativity of Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff, the reason why I say technology is not neutral, because Facebook has changed things, right? I mean, we all say that for good or for bad, there's a lot of good new things. We were talking before about he went to high school with one of my cousins' wives and knows about them. And there's some neat things that are on there. But just the way we think about friendship is altered by using that. What's that? Yeah, the way we communicate. Now, on the other hand, there are chances where I've seen somebody on Facebook, for example, mention some things about their life, and the next time when we're in person, that kind of enriches that because I can ask them about that, I can pray for them about that. But I think the question is, when you're going to use it, it is going to change you and your relationships, right? Whether you're using it for good or for bad. So thinking through what kinds of changes those are and how you're going to think about friendships. How often are you going to be on? How are you going to focus around the people around you? Being aware of those changes. Because even if you use it purely for good things, if you use it all day, it's not going to be helpful for you, right? But I think this is one of the big calls of the church is to model. Even if we just think of those simple passages like in Micah, to do justice and to walk humbly before our God, doing that online is pretty tough, you know. And but if we did that, I think we'd maybe exit out of arguments. And I pretty much now often will just say, hey, I'd love to talk with you about that in person. And unless it's someone that I can't get to and it's worthwhile. So
yeah. just one other side note is I still struggle with it. Right? Don't let the gray hair and bald head. Because it's not about age. It's about what we're doing with it. I am still an advocate of, I want to hear your voice.
Yeah.
Even if it's a phone rather than text.
Yeah.
And so many people just feel that a phone call is intrusive.
Mm-hmm.
Text message, which has no voice inflection, no any other kind of communication other than those words, I find it limiting.
Yeah. So you're saying
this way, I am one of those people that would not, at this stage in the game,
Yeah.
Whether it's here or anywhere else.
Yeah.
But we're gonna get there eventually. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read books that are shot out into the future, thousands of years, where those devices are already there, and you're seeing it today. Some of it for good, some of it I don't know.
Yeah.
But on prosthetics, kids' prosthetics. That's amazing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got.
No, there's like you're saying, there's so many different aspects to all of these things, and you mentioned earlier about, since you're not on Facebook, you miss some church announcements, and that's why I would say again, it's not neutral. It has an effect on how we communicate with church, and there's things in the future to be thinking about. So I think we want to model wisdom and looking beyond just the good and bad, and seeing some of these underlying effects that it has on us and our family and our relationships. So being observant about that as the people of God, I think, is our call, and one of the ways that we can bless and honor the world is to think well about that.
It's out of time, but any final questions? All right, Stephanie.
I work from home, and so my work is predominantly 90% on my phone. And I have, my three older ones are in school, but I still have a two-year-old. Mm. And the choice is either to put him in daycare or for him to be around me, but I am unfortunately on my phone.
Yeah.
And he watches that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 2 days a week, I try to do predominantly my work 2 days a week where he goes with a friend of mine.
Mm.
So, but it's a real hard balance of actually communicating with them that I have a job and I have to be on my phone and I'm not just playing on it. But at the same time, that's where they're seeing all the time. It's a hard battle.
So you're talking about your experiences that the kind of work you do requires a device, and you do it at home, and your kids see that. So that's I think that's an interesting modern problem, right? In that, you know, before you might have you might work on a farm, and someone, you know, you can see someone using a plow, and it's very obvious what it is that they're doing. And then we had an era where you went off, and your work was over here, and your home's over here, and your leisure's over here, and now they're getting smashed back together, right? So that we're getting calls from our kids at work, and we're getting calls from our work at home, right? So it's a very intermixed world that we have to deal with. And when your kid sees the back of a phone or a laptop, they don't know if you're reading your Bible, playing solitaire, looking at pornography, or doing work, right? They don't know. And so I think what you're doing sounds excellent. You are narrating that for them and showing them what it is to do and telling them that you care about them and this is why they're doing it. It sounds like you are a great mom. It sounds like you're doing it. So I think keep doing that, showing them, but being reflective about it with them, I think, is really, really helpful. So sounds like you're doing just about as much as you can possibly do. So, yeah.
All right, so Tim, we'll wrap up with your last question.
I do this probably, you know, unintentionally with my kids, but you know, do you carve out like an hour a day or something of just kind of alone time with your book?
Yeah, not as much. So we don't have a TV in our living area, and the kids don't have devices. So a lot of times, they're just going to naturally run off and play and do something or go outside or whatever, just because of the way that we've structured things. So we don't have to say, this is boredom time. You know, it's just that when we've done something for a little while, like let's say on a Saturday I've given them their 20 or 30 minutes of playing or whatever, and then they close it off and they run off and do something else, and so they're able to do that. And then so I don't think I have to because of some of the other structural things we put in place. But that's a great question. I think that, you know, you hear a lot of families saying that for their mealtime they have like a technology basket, they put all the stuff in there, so it's this visible reminder of where everything is, and then they pull it back out. We're not at that stage yet, but our kids have to use devices either for social or for schoolwork, so we're still in an easier stage, but I would think that's probably the better way that most families do as their kids get older, to have a place where mommy and daddy put their things. You know, when you're done with work, you put it in there too, and then that way you're not necessarily saying this is boredom time, but you're saying that we're putting everything away. So that's a great question.
You guys join me in thanking John again for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you guys are dismissed. Feel free to grab some more snacks in the foyer on your way out if you'd like, and pick up your kids.